A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to my weird prompts. I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. So Jerusalem skyline right now, you can count at least a dozen tower cranes from basically any rooftop. The city's transforming in real time, and most of the conversation about it has been planning politics or affordability, which is important. But today we're ignoring all of that.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to look at high-rises purely from a construction technology and engineering lens. No zoning debates, no nimbyism. Just the concrete, steel, elevators, and physics of building tall. He's asking six things specifically. How many skyscrapers are actually going up globally? What were the major breakthroughs that unlocked each height record? Which cities are densest per capita? Is there a dedicated subfield of high-rise engineering? What's the absolute ceiling on height with today's tech? And then, this is the curveball. If a city goes fully vertical, foundation to foundation, does all that weight actually change the geology beneath us? The answer to that last one turns out to be yes, and the numbers are genuinely unsettling. So we're going to work through the whole list. Six questions, one deep dive thread that goes from steel recipes to sinking cities.
The spine holding this together is material science and structural engineering, not architectural style. We're not going to debate which tower looks best. We're asking what keeps them standing, what prevents them from swaying people into motion sickness, and why after a certain height the laws of physics start sending you very direct memos.
Where do we start with the raw numbers? Daniel's first question was simply, are we building more high-rises globally, or has the boom peaked?
Let me give you the baseline. The Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat, CTBUH, that's the international body that tracks all this. Their mid-2026 dataset shows over 6,200 completed buildings at 150 meters or taller globally. That's 45 stories or up, roughly. In 2016, that number was around 4,500. So we're looking at roughly 38% more skyscrapers in a single decade. The rate is not slowing down. If anything, it's shifted geography. China still has about 45% of all buildings over 200 meters. That's the super tall threshold. But the fastest growth right now, the steepest part of the curve, is Southeast Asia and the Middle East. Vietnam and Indonesia are building at rates that make Shenzhen in 2018 look almost leisurely. And Saudi Arabia's pipeline, driven by the Vision 2030 projects, is enormous. The UAE continues adding towers, though they've been playing this game longer.
Israel specifically, since Daniel's watching Jerusalem cranes and specifically asked what's happening here.
Tel Aviv has around 30 buildings over 100 meters. Jerusalem historically has about 8. But the Gateway Project and new zoning frameworks are actively pushing the city toward its first 200 meters plus towers. It hasn't happened yet, but the planning is in place and several are in the pipeline. What's interesting is Jerusalem sits on a more complex geological substrate than coastal Tel Aviv, which connects directly to the geological question we'll get to later. The city's on limestone and dolomite, the Judean hills. Karst, cavities, ancient terra rosa pockets. You don't just pour a mat foundation and call it a day.
The skyscraper boom is accelerating, not plateauing. The 6,200 number is the global baseline we should have in our heads. And Jerusalem and Tel Aviv are both climbing the height ladder, even if Israel is hardly in the top tier of skyscraper counts.
Now, Daniel's second question, the major breakthroughs in height. And this is a story that isn't really about inventing new exotic materials most of the time. It's about optimization. Let me trace the timeline. The home insurance building in Chicago completed in 1885, 42 meters. To us, that's a mid-rise apartment block. To 1885, it was revelation. The first building using a structural steel frame instead of load-bearing masonry walls. That distinction matters. Before steel frames, the walls held everything up, which meant thicker walls limited window size and building height scaled with masonry weight.
Steel changed that because it could hold the load, while the walls became basically curtains.
The real unsung hero here is the Bessemer process from 1856, which made structural steel affordable at scale. Without cheap steel, no Chicago School of Architecture. You'd just be stacking brick on brick until the bottom floor became a grim, windowless bunker. Then in 1853, Elisha Otis demonstrated the safety elevator, the thing that actually made upper floors desirable instead of servant quarters and storage. Before that, people were not going to climb 12 flights of stairs daily.
Stairs is social class filter. The higher the floor, the less you paid. The elevator inverted that model entirely. Suddenly, the top floors were the penthouses.
Inverted the economics of verticality. Fast forward to 1930, the Chrysler Building, 319 meters. That leap came from riveted steel frames and the willingness to build slender, tapering forms. Wind engineering at that point was mostly hope the shape works. Then you have about a 40-year wait for the next layer, tuned mass dampers.
That's the giant pendulums inside skyscrapers, right? Multi-ton weights that swing opposite the building's motion to cancel sway.
First major installations in the 1970s, the Citigroup Center in New York has a 400-ton concrete block on a sliding bearing. The principle is straightforward. When wind pushes the tower, sensors detect the movement, and motors or passive pendulums push mass in the opposite direction. Without this, people on upper floors during wind events start feeling queasy. The human vestibular system is sensitive to acceleration, not just displacement. Even millimeters of sway at the right frequency, and people literally get motion sick.
The glockenspiel of corporate vertigo prevention, hidden in a concrete block.
After dampers came advances in high-strength concrete. By the 1990s, we had concrete grades of C80 to C100, meaning compressive strengths of 80 to 100 megapascals, roughly 800 to 1,000 kilograms per square centimeter. Older concretes were in the 40 megapascal range. Going to twice the strength lets you pour columns that are thinner for the same load or taller for the same column diameter. Burj Khalifa in 2010 uses grade C80 and C60 concrete for different portions. Then you add outrigger systems. These are horizontal structural members that connect the building's core walls to perimeter columns, so the whole tower behaves like one system resisting lateral loads. Delt trusses wrap around the perimeter to distribute the force. Those got refined tremendously in the 2000s and are now standard practice in super talls over 60 stories.
If I'm charting this right, Bessemer steel, safety elevator, tuned mass dampers, high-strength concrete, outrigger systems, those are the five breakthrough categories.
One more, foundation technology. Jeddah Tower, which is expected to push past the 1 kilometer mark when it completes, is not just tall above ground. It sits on a mat foundation 3.5 meters thick. Underneath that, 270 board piles, each 1.5 meters in diameter, driven 110 meters into the earth. That is deep enough to bury a 30-story building. For one foundation, the ratio of underground to above-ground engineering has been shifting. Modern supertalls often have 15 to 20% of their structural engineering budget below the surface.
Which connects to Daniel's fifth question directly. What's the ceiling on all this? Is there some absolute height limit with today's technology?
There are two main ceilings. First, the material ceiling. Concrete, the highest grade stuff we can reliably pour and pump, maxes out around grade C120 to C130. With that, structural engineers estimate the theoretical maximum height is roughly 1600 meters. That's almost exactly 1 mile. After that, no matter how clever your form, the weight of the structure above starts to crush the columns below. It's called the self-weight problem. Concrete at the base of a theoretical mile-high tower would be bearing so much load that it's flirting with its own compressive strength limit before you factor in any live load, people, furniture, wind.
Everything above that point is just an elaborate way to crush itself.
It's literally stone-eating itself. But there's a second ceiling. Elevator rope weight. Standard traction elevators use steel cables. Those cables hang from the top of the shaft. At around 500 meters, the rope itself, its own weight, exceeds about 30% of the elevator's total lifting capacity. Go higher, and the rope weight so dominates that you need vastly heavier cables, which require bigger motors and impose more structural load. The economic crossover point for conventional steel rope systems lands around 500 to 600 meters of shaft height. Beyond that, you're paying more and more for less and less capacity. The proposed solution to both ceilings. ThyssenKrupp's Immulti system from 2017 eliminates the rope entirely. Multiple cars travel in a loop shaft using linear motor technology, moving vertically and horizontally. No counterweight, no rope. That would be the key to mile-high buildings. And it's not widely deployed yet.
Frank Lloyd Wright drew the Illinois, the mile-high tower, in 1956. But you're saying in 2026 we actually have most of the structural capability to build it. The first order technology exists. We just can't get people above floor 600 without putting them on an inclined horizontal shuttle loop.
That's essentially it. The concrete's there. Wind aerodynamics are solvable. Burj Khalifa's Y-shaped floor plan reduces wind forces by about 25% compared to a rectangular tower of equivalent height. Jeddah Tower will push past 1,008 meters using that tapered triangular form and those massive piles. Carbon fiber reinforced composites could theoretically push to 2,000 meters or beyond, but cost is so prohibitive that nobody has run the serious financial analysis. So the true ceiling is physics crossed with elevator logistics and economics.
Let's talk about cities and density then. Daniel's third question, highest per capita concentration of skyscrapers.
Hong Kong is the outlier among major cities, roughly 355 buildings over 150 meters serving a population around 7.5 million. That's one skyscraper per 21,000 people. New York is similar in raw count, about 300 such towers for 8.5 million, so one per roughly 28,000 residents. It's in the same ballpark. But Shenzhen, which built about 190 of those towers, has a population closer to 17.5 million, so it actually sits at about 1 per 92,000 people.
That's a vastly different feel on the ground. Hong Kong and New York feel like extreme verticals. Shenzhen's towers are spread out, or the city is just huge.
But the actual per capita skyline density winner is Monaco. Roughly one skyscraper per 8,000 people, because the available land is vanishingly small and the only way to go is up. Monaco doesn't have a huge absolute number of towers, something like 8 to 10 over 150 meters, but the population is tiny. Extreme land scarcity produces extreme tower per person ratios. This also reflects building typology. Monaco's towers are residential, Hong Kong's are heavily residential, mixed with office, Manhattan is office with recent residential infill.
What's Israel's per capita? Northern Tel Aviv plus Ramat Gan stock?
Israel would be much lower, maybe one high-rise per 1 or 200,000 people. The high scores happen where every square meter of land acts as a constraint. So you either compete globally, and tell me what Daniel was asking, is there a specialized subdiscipline devoted purely to high-rise construction? Because these structures differ from, say, a sports stadium or a six-story car park in pretty fundamental ways. And I find the existence of this formal subdiscipline satisfying. Within the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, there is a specific technical council on tall buildings and urban habitat. The structural engineering firms that win most of the super tall towers worldwide have dedicated tall building design groups, AREP, Thornton Tomasetti, some. These are engineers whose entire careers are the physics of towers stretching above about 200 meters.
The CTBUH itself functions as the industry's home base. It publishes its own categorized database on every serious building, holds the annual Tall Buildings Conference, defines categories like super tall, as above 300 meters, and megatall, as above 600 meters.
The criteria are extremely technical, and they go deep into assessment and forensic investigation of successful and failed designs. Meanwhile, there's a dedicated peer review journal, The Structural Design of Tall and Special Buildings, entirely focused on the problems particular to gaining altitude in the built environment. High earthquake zones, typhoon zones, weak soils. They're publishing detailed response analyses that inform actual foundation and damper designs for real projects everybody recognizes.
Under the heading of Supertall Engineering, these firms and practices have produced everything from novel-tuned liquid dampers to perimeter diagrid arrangements that channel loads along the whole skin of the building. They essentially treat wind loading like three different separate movement vectors happening simultaneously and combat them with shape rather than just counterweights.
Yes, engineering firms like Thornton Tomasetti routinely test super-tall formwork with computational fluid dynamics, proper CFD, to shape the building's profile for minimal wind drag. That's why many newer high-rise silhouettes aren't perfectly straight extrusions. There are curves and chamfers calculated not by architectural whimsy but by aerodynamic necessity, by how the movement of air stresses certain joints. So we can say yes. That's the answer to, is there a subset who do this full-time? Absolutely, it's vibrant and global.
Now we get to the most provocative question Daniel asked. If a city built out so heavily, like Manhattan to the horizon's vanishing point, uniform high density with high-rise foundations in all directions, would all that concentrated weight change the geology underneath, literally shift bedrock, or the way stresses travel?
This is where the real minds of geology, structural safety, and geotechnical sensing meet, and the answer is unequivocally yes, and it's very poorly accounted for outside professional risk modeling.
Take one super tall. Start with a discrete unit.
The Burj Khalifa weighs about 500,000 tons. Imposing that onto a chosen specific footprint pushes a significant localized load into deeper strata toward the Earth's upper crustal plates. Now take cities generally. Multiply that behavior cumulatively. For Manhattan, multiple separate engineering modeling exercises, some from 2023 and 2024, estimate the total above-ground imposed weight of its district-built environment in the neighborhood of 125 million tons. That count doesn't fully add subway infrastructure or vehicular loads, and it's sitting on Pleistocene-era deposits of weathered metamorphic substrate above bedrock that's not infinite rigid resistance. It deforms.
125 megatons causes what precisely?
It sits on top and acts like a weight on a rubber-kneaded natural crust, a gentle bulge of compaction formation migrating.
Lay out the connection between vertical load and surface stability gradually. Walk me through the unit mechanics.
The Earth's crust has a degree of isostatic response where sustained loading produces a tiny subsidence rate. Certain established systematic survey data, almost wholly physical, via global positioning arrays and synthetic aperture radar applied over decades, indicates areas containing very dense structural weight loads subside at higher than reference rates when groundwater and other factors remain equal in statistical modeling of the base case.
One perfect testing ground consistent enough this has been quantified is relatively well-instrumented city control survey frameworks. So datasets with 60-plus year precision show consistent settlement signals measurable against a static geodetic benchmark outside the stress zone.
You're exactly probing what structural and civil engineers now refer to as induced compaction, a share that shows district variance from simple clay packing alteration. Manhattan's probable incremental loss of elevation has numerous borehole load measure reports from the 40s onward. A slice extracted and collated by analysts in Earth's Future, published 2024 in conjunction with several university Earth and Environment collaborations, gives a plausibly isolated structural-only metric, 1 to 2 millimeters of descending vertical shift per year, caused by not groundwater pump down, common beyond the precinct near other underlying conditions, but just stable heavy buildings pressing downward.
2 millimeters per year, over 80 earthly traversals, feels invisible, but in a century.
80 plus above previous settlement cycles resulting only from heavy point load settling city core plus upper mass transport margins, leading linearly toward 8 inches in a static lens geographical band. A kind of deliberate descent unlike generic tides. The hazard enters that a given portion can interline with simultaneous hazards from aquifer changes, adding another millimeter quicker if pulled down simultaneously, compacting cumulative aquifer exposure collapse heights within margins relevant to gravity-fed flood defense zones.
We, in effect, can lower the margin.
Lowering 2 or 3 spatiotemporal millimeters every cycle, while the surfaces rise because we haven't reduced loaded footprint count eroding permanent hard coastal outlets. And Shanghai Pudong has given a sort of direct, close-coupled observation window. Old quarter metropolitan cells sank less stably. 2 millimeters might echo inland depression changes. But Pudong, a newer high-structure mega-density precinct placed since 1990 onward, declined much faster.
These urban observation reports span 5 times the new block's annual slide pressure from weight alone collapsing aquifer margin versus the quiet quarter observing potentially up to 500% relative surface descent every pass.
Precisely the wedge, because new high design includes intense mat column matrix infiltration restraining flow inside urban clay pack from raising up, so rate detection doubles. Without getting too lab dataset why, the emerging understanding is, our building constructs wick instability beyond safety value tolerance, unless zones are rewater normalized soon, since adjacent to, and crossing into the Hayward Fault right next to built rapid obs during earthquakes. Added distributed surface load can tip fault movement rate. Document field reasoning out of the same 2024 piece suggests a circa 5 to probably the upper end of 15% rise in simulated slippage over a multi-tenor time frame. One could scarcely conjure clearer parallel human calibration errors accumulating misplaced stress models currently unprepared.
5 to 15% more earthquake onset seems ridiculously careful. In a next-generation city becoming crowded, one improbable jolt makes more damage where frames warp inward atop fallen patch displacement.
Geologists appear. Unworked stone recleaves underneath to capture shifting.
This is precisely what should trouble, or have mayors and resilience officers insisting on scanning, on routinely doing micro-deformation mapping combined with AI displacement alerts, enabled sector by sector, block by mega block, improving neighborhood stabilization adjustments before trapped waves deform basement walls 10 stories down.
It used to belong only raise grade higher. That meant absolute rechecking street drainage slope ratios redesigned higher instead minimal. Consistent precision incline maintaining fast emergency washing mechanism, capability toward absorbing monsoon flow events concurrent with coastal ingress. For all impervious plaza load region, redistributed surface moving away alignment. Coastal cities regularly subsidensable should mandate tilted engineering gradient trackable on dashboard.
The worst lag factor is aquifers getting permanent squeezed from packed skyscraper foundation meshes over cover compressives tightening around, diminishing underground fresh reserve where any reclaimed system top off usually trickle feed injection reverse ratio fails to force out less. Now, Mexico City gets about 60% from groundwater, but building weight increased disproportionately, and anywhere active descending pack becomes lost dense stone forever altered during construction cycles stressing hydration capacity from thousand-year sourcing embedded far beneath.
All of those numbers connect concisely back to structural piles. You and I mentioned massive shafts transferred stack plus surface combination, avoiding nearby void. That weight eventually some ways must go onto the side far lateral escaping manageable ret. Settlement toward the grade lateral path shifted, where even inert rock with micro defects yields under maximal values, added continually, the deeper one goes, constructing footprints entirely blocking out soak absorption, passive recharge. And in all these models across San Francisco running inputs through program, feed within. Emergent conclusion, same quiet but unambiguous, dense vertical mass loading, dust compress far enough, earth parameter, non-isotropic.
Having sailed through Hypertol, and the hidden foundation tension stored releasing upon reorientation reaction shifts, do prospective forward planners get updates handed? Meaning future downtown core maximum. Build analysis proactively holds better regional modeling safe limits before hitting cascaded alarm along any contiguous fault. Is it embedded municipal regulation anywhere?
London for deep soil proximity constraints mandate, sort of structural cell max guidance alongside heritage, ancient base disturbance criteria. But very few nations wrote binding urban thickness loading slope policy guidance yet. A handful of southeast spots directly impose neighborhood weight caps distributing bulk to less core. Column dense compact on specific newly stretched clays mapped back bay coastal flats across Jakarta region.
At least we've outlasted wondering, does weight matter? How amusing, tall building code cycles omitted assigning earth cascade safe offset belt time when faster water clay waiting, locked into 10 metropolis run, lowered beneath buffer, tolerable delta level within 2 cycles rising combined storms. If not systematic survey-led loading rules coverage still, the hollowness in the pyramid, very slowly tilting the pyramid, And so a newer discipline crop becomes more vital. Each building applying deeper, heavier towers horizontally clumping.
Call it urban geophysics, slightly aspirational emergence field, fusing engineering geology with structural dynamics, anchored for protecting cityscape from own weight.
Or declare that making genuine civilization sink awareness regulation. Earthbound, summarizing tail observation.
First, materials and known tall wind building define tangible max until lifts advance, present steel plus best concrete get safe. Upper theoretical top of 1600 odd meters, just past measurement 1 mile over grade set. Large positive limit, even imagination possible today.
Highest ranked per cap verticality happens where area force tiny. Vancouver macro zone demands rooftop pattern keeping open. The dedicated engineer designs never generic, 5 over 1.
Primarily is Skyscrapsity specialization reality, fully staffed subdiscipline, interlocking firm experts cooperating with city data. Then curve fascinating returns, weight building produced gentle depressed, down yielding increased threats from quake time plus thirsty ever min. Compressive shall W subsurface making matter pushed always proportionally more southeast spreading. Today existing field set marking deep footing toward keep groundwater moderate. Front yard plus vehicle remains trivial. Underground megaton block compound multiplied. 90T EDT as EDTT. Takeaway delivery pair approach.
Explicit, easily remembered operational equation. Next city tower proposal permit. Hearing callback, actual soil report question. Pushed, determined. Resting composition secured, buried water at bedrock. Or hitting loose drain. Unconsolidated, saturated, lacustrine, empty fill, increasing sliding sink. Dozens, triple rate.
Clarify. Ask municipal continuity must invest vertical full cycle engineering, specifically embedding long observed grade layer transform, prior to shoving economic shortcut quick turn compacts, a dead residual mineral. APIAP, fun twist diversion, Herman, but corn smiles giving cue, and now connecting through crisp fun as always, regarding unrelated random odd domain came by signature. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact. Underworld of microbial ancient deliberate flavor transformation time windows across isolation northern archipelago horizon.
During the 1880s, among the exiled prison settlements of Sakhalin, convicts fermented edible seasonal bull kelp with leftover hardened rye bread and accidentally produced a piquant carbonated brine, later officially described by Russian naval medical officers as criminal cola.
Pause. Thank you, Hilbert. That is staying with me not. Concluding Ty strongly asking Wanda openly. The mile-height vertical meta-city begins definitely feasible, yet bottom-where crowd summit, dense dynamic deform margin, unmapped truly spontaneous self-field test outcome. Re-emerging pushed inside, unknown unstable tier. Herman encouraged invite interest softly. Please, if one geotech acquainted, raise human reach horizon, drop their friend who lives near new tower, hop in presently mid-routine. Shifting built, pass link recorded full share, subtly instructive notion line, engineering extra standard, no merely heavy matter, though redesign momentum steadily real-time shaper. Pitch questions anytime via my weird prompts. Thank our neighbor and producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. Well, from Corn and me, Herman. This has been My Weird Prompts.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.